Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
Hi, everyone. It's Valen Oliver again, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Feminist Book Club. Today, I have the honor of talking to Michelle Bilodeau and Karen Cleveland about their new book, The New Wedding Book. Michelle Bilodeau is a Toronto-based writer and editor focusing on lifestyle, beauty, fashion, and cannabis. She has worked in Canadian media for nearly 20 years. With staff positions at Flair Fashion and The Kip, she has written for Hello Canada, Refinery 29 Canada, CBC, Latitude, The Toronto Star, and more. Michelle is a regular on-air contributor for The Social. A graduate of the print journalism program at Centennial College, Michelle has taught and guest lectured at Centennial College. She is also currently a student of the Ontario Psychotherapy and Counseling Program. Karen Cleveland is a Toronto-based marketer and writer. She has contributed to outlets across North America, focusing on lifestyle content such as travel, fashion, beauty, culture, weddings, and wine. For more than 10 years, Karen wrote an etiquette column. More recently, she penned the Manners 2.0 column in the Toronto Star. She is regularly called upon to comment in the media, including the New York Times, eTalk, ET Canada, Canadian Press, Wedding Bells, and more. A graduate of York University, Karen has worked in various sectors in marketing and communications. She is a guest lecturer at Ryerson University and York University. Welcome, Karen and Michelle.
Hello. Hi.
Thanks for being here with us today. I'm super excited to talk to you about this book. But before we get into it, Renee typically asks all of her authors that come on the show, what is your definition of feminism? So I'm super interested in hearing what both of your definitions would be.
Ooh, yeah, I love that one. My definition of feminism is equality for all. And it just means giving women a seat at the table and an opportunity to live to our potential without somebody diminishing us just because of our sex.
Oh, damn, that's good. I want to say what she said. That'd be a cop out. Everything Michelle said, into which I would add my definition of feminism, is a value system that prioritizes and champions women's perspectives and anyone who identifies as a woman, and gives women the latitude to define how they want to live their life.
Yes. I really wanted to ask you both that question because it really, both of you guys gave like the perfect definition, but it really comes through in the new wedding book as well, that you guys are really looking out for women, but also non-binary folks and men in this wedding space. But to back up a little bit, I do want to ask you guys, when did you start writing the new wedding book?
We actually started writing it over 5 years ago. And initially, our focus was on just modernizing the wedding industry. And in that time, the Me Too and Time's Up movement happened and Black Lives Matter came to more prominence. So we really were able to hone in our thesis and thankfully focus on just debunking this industry and how patriarchal it is, and also how white it is. You don't see a lot of representation in the wedding industry. And even for us as white cisgender women, we know that there's probably some stuff that we missed in the book, but we're open to feedback and we want to hear from people because we do know that this industry is so fraught with patriarchal ideals. And we want to do our best to try and help people feel like they can be their true selves on their wedding day, no matter what that looks like.
Yeah, I really liked how you guys focused on like you do you instead of like all of the I do's that people have to say throughout the process of the wedding planning. I also really liked how each chapter broke down each step of the wedding planning process, because initially when I heard about this book through Karen, I thought that this was going to be like one of those books that's tearing down weddings and like completely going to be like, hey, we don't want weddings anymore. Let's get rid of them. They don't make sense, because that's where I am. And I was like, I'm so here for that. But after reading your book, I'm almost like, okay, now I want a wedding, but
There has to be boundaries. But I really am interested in hearing, like, I just heard a little bit of like why you decided to write the book and how it came about. But like, what was the writing process and the research process behind the book?
Well, Michelle mentioned we started 5 years ago, and that 5 years ago was right on the heels of when Michelle and I each got married. So we're good friends. So we were in each other's lives when we were each planning our weddings, we were at each other's weddings. And we got to the other side of it. And we, you know, as all problems are solved on a patio with a beer, we're like, well, that was ludicrous. That was crazy. That wasn't what I thought it was going to be. So as friends, we started just sort of rehashing how things felt as women and how it felt like the industry approached us and talked to us and things that we didn't like. And then we sort of spoke to more friends and pressure tested that. And we knew we were onto something when almost every woman we spoke to, I'd say couples in general, but women in particular, said, yeah, that experience was not as I was told it was going to be. I was sold a false bill of goods. And you're totally right. We don't tear down weddings. We love weddings. If you invite Michelle and I to your wedding, we will be the first person on the dance floor and the last person to leave. You'll have to drag us out. We love weddings. But that doesn't mean we didn't want weddings to go unchallenged. So it was rooted in our own experience of getting married. And then we just went to town on it. We were so pleasantly surprised we ended up getting a book deal. So that gave us a real sort of fire under us to do some serious research and make sure that this book was academically sage and that we really did our recon on it. And it was a blast to write it.
Cool. So you said it was in the making for 5 years, which means you guys obviously were blindsided by the pandemic as well as everyone else. Do you think the pandemic helped or hurt like the mission or the story behind what you guys put into this book?
To be honest, at first we were a bit nervous. We were like, oh no, like what does this mean? And we were fortunate enough that our final draft was due to the publisher in end of May 2020. So we were able to add a little bit of information on the pandemic and speak to it a little bit, and obviously not change it so that it was a pandemic wedding book, because that's not the point. But what we, after like in the editing process and while we were building up to do marketing and press for the book, we kind of realized that the pandemic was a major shift for the wedding industry, which is what we were kind of hoping for anyway. So a lot of people have been able to have really beautiful, intimate ceremonies without completely breaking the bank or going into their savings. And I think it has really, for weddings in particular, and for people in general, one of the like small silver linings of the pandemic is that people are feeling more that they need to be true to their beliefs and who they are. They would need to be more empathetic to other people and hopefully less judgmental. So I think all of those things bode really well for somebody who wants to get married, you know, now while we're at the tail end, hopefully, of the pandemic and even post-pandemic. So there's a really great boutique in Toronto called Lover's Land. And we were on the phone with those ladies a couple of weeks ago. And one thing that they told us that wasn't really a surprise, but it was really nice to hear, was that a lot of couples last summer went into the shop and were basically like, oh, thank God, because of the pandemic, we don't have to have this monstrous wedding. We're just going to elope, or we're just going to do a city hall something and plan something later. So yeah, I do think it was a good thing in terms of helping put weddings in perspective for people.
Yeah. Like I said, I wasn't expecting it to be like a full-on guide, but it wasn't overwhelming. It was very digestible. And I think that the guide was so, it almost was like catered to post-pandemic, but it wasn't, you know what I mean? Like the idea of being more intimate and doing exactly what makes you happy and not necessarily trying to please other people. And those are all of the things that a lot of us have learned throughout the pandemic in general. And so I think this guide is almost catered towards post-pandemic life, which is kind of crazy that you guys are fortune tellers.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. So after all of the research that you guys have done, would you guys plan your wedding differently or would you have kept it the same?
That's always a million-dollar question. No, I think I would have the exact same wedding. I think I would have the exact same wedding. And I'd be pretty pretty delighted about it. Yeah.
I would do everything pretty much the same. There's two small things I would change. I went over budget on my wedding dress, and not that I want to change the dress that I wore. I loved what I wore. I just would have been a bit more thoughtful about it and not been like, oh, here, it's fine. I'll pay it off later. Like that kind of thing. And yeah, there was one little like traditional thing that my mom kind of had her heart set on that I didn't really find necessary. And not that I would necessarily change it, but it just wasn't something that I really needed on my wedding day. But other than that, yeah, I wouldn't change anything.
Okay. Throughout the story or throughout the book, there are short stories that you guys collected from people. And those are my favorite parts of the book. But how did you guys go about collecting these stories? And then if you don't mind answering this question, what would be one of your favorite of the short stories?
Yeah, we leaned on friends for sure. Some of those stories are stories from people we know personally, but we also put a call out to a lot of our friends and said, hey, do you know any cool couples who have just gotten married and can we talk to them? And luckily, yeah, we're so fortunate that the book is peppered with some really awesome, interesting stories. And my favorite, which isn't because I love the story, but I love, because it was partially the impetus for the book, was the story about the bride whose mother-in-law completely changed everything about the wedding. And we were like, oh God, like why does that happen? Why do people get so entitled and emotional around a wedding that's not theirs? So that story really helped us kind of hone in our thesis. So in a way, that's it's one of the standouts for me. I don't want to say favorite because it's such a fraught story, but yeah.
That's such a heartbreaker, that one. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't read the book, there's a mother-in-law coming in hot. My favorite, is Tanisha and Jan, who are a couple who live in Berlin. Tanisha is Jamaican by way of Toronto, who then moved to Rome and then met her now husband, Jan, who's Czech, and they live in Berlin. And what I thought was awesome about their wedding is the intersection between different cultures, and they just did whatever they wanted. There was no rule book. She wore this like gorgeous gold cocktail dress. They had this interesting mashup of Jamaican and Czech food. At a certain point in the night, Tanisha took over the music and was DJing her own wedding. It was just a wedding that I think everyone had a blast off good time. And even in recounting that story, you can just feel the fun that they had. And they totally liberated themselves from any supposed to do. And I just thought it was such a lovely, fun wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tanisha and Jan was actually my favorite, followed up by the anonymous couple that did the Facebook live stream. Oh my goodness. I almost cried.
Mm-hmm.
That one was so beautiful to me, how they had the three separate parts of the ceremony and then three separate parts of like how they celebrated their union together. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Now that I'm getting all teary-eyed again, let's switch topics a little bit. So I really enjoyed, I know that you guys said that you would accept feedback, but I also really enjoyed how other cultures, and there was a lot of diversity highlighted throughout the book, how you guys really focused on different cultures and not just like the westernized wedding culture. And then you even pointed out in one chapter that whitewashing has been erasing Black South African wedding culture. And I found that different than a lot of the wedding books that I've read or come across. And I wanted to ask you, do you think Toronto has an influence on how you look at other cultures and diversity? What inspired you to add so much diversity into your book?
That's such a good question. I think we had a responsibility and an opportunity to celebrate diversity, and Michelle and I valued those things. So we had to do right by that. But that the particular chapter that you're talking about, which I found so interesting, this researcher that looks at reality television, sort of like the South African equivalent to Say Yes to the Dress. I'm blanking on the name of the program. But yeah, basically minimizes traditional Black South African weddings and instead really puts this way over emphasis on the Western white wedding, which is rooted in the Anglican church. And it forced us to really question, like, why is that? And why do we wear these white dresses and get married in churches anyways? Like, whose culture got to be centered? So a bit of it, I think, was just like an academic responsibility that we had to turn over every stone in researching this book and writing the book. But yeah, like I've lived in Toronto for more than 20 years now. It's definitely home for me. And Toronto loves to talk about how it's the most diverse city in the world, which doesn't mean it's not racist. And that doesn't mean it's not inclusive. So there's, you know, the same hard work being done here in Toronto. But I do think there's publications that you do see representation probably a bit more easily than you would maybe in some other places. And thank goodness in Canada, everyone can marry whomever they want. So a bit of that is sort of baked into being Canadian. But I would say that doesn't necessarily make it on the cover of bridal magazines here, right? Or on the landing page of wedding websites. So we just wanted to showcase those interesting stories and make sure that if we're going to write a wedding book, that we had to do it in a really thorough way. And I'm really glad that that resonated with you, Ellen, because that's like high praise. If we got it right, then that makes me sleep better at night. Thank you.
Yeah. I really enjoyed hearing about the different cultures, and even like, obviously I don't want to be a culture. I don't want to appropriate other people's cultures, but there were certain things that I had seen that I was like, oh my goodness, like that's such a magical way to incorporate something into a ceremony or a union. So yeah, I really took a lot away from this book, and it's so interesting, not to talk about myself, but just for a second. I grew up in a Christian household. So I was very much like, I have to have a wedding, have to have a wedding. And then when I drifted away from religion, I was more like, weddings are too much money. I'd rather spend the money on the vacation. But now that I'm getting older and, you know, relationships become more intimate as you get older, I'm like, no, I do want certain people around. And then reading this book was just like, okay. I also was a wedding DJ. So that may have been the reason.
Amazing.
Why.
For real?
That's like,
so cool.
Yes. I was a wedding DJ for about a year, and I was sick of carrying the speakers around. I'm only 5'1". So I gave it up, but I do DJ part-time for friends. But that's so, so I cool. also, I really appreciated the part about not allowing families to take over the receptions, because the clinking of the glasses is just way too much sometimes. It's like nonstop. They don't stop. So I really liked how you guys highlighted in the book that it's okay to set boundaries for your one day. So what was like one of your favorite chapters to write about or research?
I really loved when I think it's kind of peppered through all the chapters, but similar to what you're just saying, like, I really love where we talk about where traditions actually stem from and how there are these romanticized ideas now that it's like, you know, you have to have your father walk you down the aisle. I think we're done with the garter belt, hopefully, but like for the longest time, it was, you know, this garter belt thing, which is so gross. And only because like, you don't need your partner to take lingerie off of you in front of your parents. But then also the origins of why that is a thing at weddings is also really icky. So for me, it was like kind of showing where those traditions came from. And I hope that we impressed upon people that people should edit according to what makes them feel good. So, you know, the father walking a bride down the aisle is super patriarchal because it essentially was the idea that the father was kind of ensuring that the bride was going directly from his home to her partner, future husband's home. And like, no man should come in between.
Yeah.
For me personally, if my father had been alive, he would have walked me down the aisle. That would have, because even knowing that, my dad and I had a really special relationship and I would have wanted to honor that. So instead, because my father wasn't around, I actually had my grandfather and my uncle walk me down the aisle to kind of represent my father because he wasn't there. But I hope that the book impresses upon people that even if you find the origin of the tradition a bit icky, if it is something that has meaning to you, then go for it or edit it accordingly. Like we've seen, you know, Prince Charles walked Meghan Markle halfway down the aisle and then she walked herself down the aisle. We've seen people have best friends walk each other down the aisle. Like, do whatever works for you and make that tradition your own, and you'll feel good about it on the other side, hopefully.
What about for you, Karen?
My favorite thread of the book is the sort of beauty discourse and how women's appearance, in particular women's weight, is policed in the wedding sector. And I like putting on makeup to look special when I feel like it, but I have a problem with someone telling me that my appearance is something to be fixed. And the way the wedding industry speaks to women, and it doesn't really speak to men in the same way. Like, this is still very much like, there's no groom industry. There's a wedding industry that's synonymous with brides. is that you're from the time you get engaged, your appearance is a project for you to work on. And all it does is make women feel like shit. And it makes them part with their hard-earned dollars for what? Like to look like a different version of yourself on your wedding day. It seems really fucked up. So I really got deep into that chapter, but it really bummed me out. And in the interviews we did around it, we interviewed one researcher, Sarah Santarosa, who's a researcher, I'm blanking on where she practices out of, but studies body image, and in particular, body image on social media and how the narratives of women, if you're constantly praised for your appearance, you're always chasing that next sort of high. And when she was shopping for her own wedding dress, she went to a bridal store and this woman commented on how like she better stop working out because she's clearly overdoing it and her shoulders are getting a bit too big. And she's actually a super competitive athlete. And it floored me the audacity that people have to comment on women's bodies. Like they just feel like it's everyone's their business to tell you how to look, what to eat. Blows my mind. And I'm disappointed, but also really interested in what's going to happen culturally over the next few years. I hope women are just going to say like, no more, I'm not having it. But then I see young women who are almost doubling down on it. And what used to be the far end of extravagance was maybe getting your hair and makeup professionally done. Now it's like a year of photo facials and you got to get Botox and you got to get your teeth straightened. Like it's this.
Yeah.
And I really hope that we've just peaked and it's done. I hope we're done.
Yeah, I was really blown away by the Minnesota Somalian community using skin lightening cream still. There was another, the IV, the lady that did an IV for a week straight for a diet.
The feeding tube in her nose.
Yeah, that scared me.
Yeah, yeah.
That is
it's scary.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's too far. It's too much.
And even for a doctor to okay that, it was just like, wow. They make exceptions for like you're saying, like there's this weird almost exception bubble when it comes to weddings where it's okay to body shame people, it's okay to be misogynistic, it's okay to be homophobic, and they just throw it in a bubble and they're like, but it's just that bubble and it's okay to do those things. And it's actually really scary and dangerous. So I'm glad that you guys also highlighted those points. One of the points that I really enjoyed though was the heels tips, because since the pandemic, I have not worn heels, and I put on heels the other day and I was like, woo. So I will definitely be putting CBD cream on my feet from now
on. Yes. Hot tip from Michelle.
Yeah. Those heels tips came from me because I ruined my feet running and playing soccer in my 20s and early 30s. And I had to try all of these things to try, because I wanted to wear these like crazy heels that I got that I love. They're super beautiful. And I had to try and figure out ways to like make it through the night. I actually, it's terrible. I had two of my toes were completely numb for 2 weeks after my wedding. Like I was nervous that I did nerve damage on my foot. I'm fine. But I also used those tips. Like I had the cream, I had high heels, and then I went to like a lower heel throughout the night. Like I did all of these things, and still it was like, for 2 weeks after the wedding, I was like, did I totally ruin my feet? So hopefully, but after the pandemic, like there is no way I'm getting in a pair of heels. Like I'm all about funky, fun flats. Like I will never wear heels again.
Kitten heels. That's it for me. Kitten heels.
Yeah. Kitten heels. Yeah. Tops.
Well, I really think that this book is actually like, I'm very much into self-help books, and I've said that so many times on this podcast, and I would have never thought that a wedding book could be almost like a self-help book, but it was very therapeutic. So I think that this book is like really important work. And I think it's super important post-pandemic. Like I said, I think it's like almost psychic, like you guys were just foretelling the future almost. So I do think that it's really important that if you are planning a wedding or thinking about a wedding, that you go pick up this book. In the US, they're available at Barnes & Noble. You can order it on Amazon, or if you go to the New Wedding Book on Instagram, you can click the link and find a way to order the book as well. But Karen and Michelle, where can we find you online if anyone is looking to reach out?
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter and Instagram with just M for Michelle and Bilodeau, my last name.
Yeah. And I'm on those same places. I'm Karen Cleveland, just like the city.
Perfect. And again, my name is Phelan Oliver. You can find me at Phelan Oliver on Instagram. Thank you all again for tuning into this interview with Karen and Michelle for the new wedding book. Please go pick it up. Like I said, if you are planning a wedding or if you're just in a relationship and you are trying to convince someone to get you a ring, this would be the time to read this book as well. Thank you again, Karen and Michelle, for coming on.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
We wanted to take a moment to thank everyone that's reviewed us on Apple Podcasts so far. We really appreciate your reviews. They go a long way, especially those 5-star reviews really help us gain notoriety and help other people to see the content that we're producing here. I wanted to read a 5-star review from E. Terwell. They said, "Fun and educated hosts. Excited to hear all the various hosts of this podcast have to offer on books, pop culture, the Zodiac, and their individual walks of life." A huge thank you to E. Terwell for reviewing us and saying all those kind things. And we just ask that if you are also enjoying listening to this podcast and what we have to say, that you head on over to Apple Podcasts and drop us a 5-star review. It'll really help us in the long run. Now let's get back to the show.
Hi everyone, Renee Powers here, and I wanted to give you some behind-the-scenes business updates for Feminist Book Club. If you don't know, in addition to this podcast, Feminist Book Club has a blog, a subscription box, a super active online community, and I'm excited to share that in-person events are back. We will get to that shortly. First, I want to tell you that this podcast will be taking a short break at the beginning of July. This will be the last episode you'll hear for a couple of weeks to allow us to kind of catch our breaths and get some more content in the hopper for you. The Feminist Book Club blog will also take a short break during that time, but when we come back mid-July, we will be diving headfirst into readathon-related content. As you are probably aware by now, our super popular online readathon is back and honestly better than before. You can join us July 23rd through the 25th for a low stakes, high reward readathon. Basically, all you got to do is commit to reading at some point that weekend. Make sure you're registered to be eligible for prizes. Interact with us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok all weekend. We will actually kick off Thursday night, so July 22nd, with our Q&A with author Nikita Gill. You heard it here first. This Q&A will be open to all. Typically, our author events are members only, but we thought this would be the perfect opportunity to kick off the event, to show non-members what it's like to be a part of the club. So make sure you head over to feministbookclub.com/readathon for all the details. Readathon is one word. There's an FAQ. Our prize list is up. Our merch store will be up soon. Everything you need to know is at feministbookclub.com/readathon. Now, if you are in the Twin Cities area, I would love to invite you to join us in person for our grand opening on Saturday, July 24th. We're going to open the doors of our new space in the Seward neighborhood at 9 a.m. with a yoga class led by our operations assistant, Kathleen. We'll also have Coconut Whisk Cafe on hand to serve up a gluten-free waffle bar. And if that's not enough, you will be able to pick up your August Beach Read boxes early or purchase the August box without a subscription for the first time ever. Some of our small business friends will have tables to share their products as well, so come ready to shop, to support small businesses, to celebrate community, to take some pics in front of our amazing mural, and please, please, please introduce yourself. I can't wait to meet you. And additionally, in person, we just submitted an application to be a vendor at the Twin Cities Pride Festival on July 17th and 18th, so fingers crossed, hopefully I'll see you there too. I wanted to share a little bit about our July boxes because they're honestly, honestly one of the best boxes we've ever done. Our theme is poetry, so all of the products come from businesses with rhyming brand names. I couldn't help it. It was way too fun. I know poetry doesn't have to rhyme, but just let me have my fun. First of all, the book of the month is Fierce Fairy Tales, Poems and Stories to Stir Your Soul by Nikita Gill. I've heard nothing but fantastic things about this book, about Nikita's writing. And as I mentioned before, she will be joining us from Belfast for a Q&A. She's staying up till 1 a.m. her time to do this, so we better turn out. In addition to this gorgeous book, Box subscribers will receive 5 rhyming products. My personal fave and what inspired the rhyming brand name theme here is Gustola Granola, a local Minneapolis premium granola company that I absolutely adore. Members will receive a full-size bag of this tasty treat. It's perfect for topping yogurt, smoothie bowls, or honestly just snacking on dry, which is exactly what we do at the office. I always have a bag of Gustola granola on my desk. The hazelnut blueberry is my favorite. Next up is the Mad Gabs Moose Smooch, a double rhyming delight. So Mad Gabs is a body care company out of Maine, and their Moose Smooch lip balm is one of their most popular products. So each member in July will receive a 3-pack of their lip balm. I am a lip balm junkie, so I can honestly say this is one of my favorite formulas. It's perfect for, you know, dry summer heat, or for those of us in the Midwest, dry winter, like sub-zero temperatures. So next up is a set of punny postcards from the Louisiana-based company Rutabaga Bodega, which is just so fun to say. I fell head over heels in love with their art featuring plant-based puns. You got to check out all of their art. They've got Alexander Yamilton, Celery Clinton. I'm trying to think of some of their others. They just crack me up. But members will receive 3 postcards, one featuring Rutabaga Ginsburg, one with Okra Winfrey, and one with Tina Turnip. So funny. If you want to frame them instead of send them to friends, I won't blame you. I think that's what I'm going to do. Now, our next product, 4th product, in case you're keeping track at home, is a set of stickers from A. Fink and Inc., a Minneapolis-based stationery company by artist Andy Fink, who actually stopped by the office this week to drop off the stickers. And I can tell you personally, Andy is an absolute delight. The stickers we're featuring are called I'm Sweet on You, and they have a variety of summery fruit and flowers, perfect to decorate your water bottle, planners, notebooks, whatever you use. I want to see pictures where you put your Sweet on You stickers. And finally, July Box subscribers will also get a can of Ouroboros sparkling water. So I'm a stereotypical millennial in that I can't get enough sparkling water. I always have a variety in the fridge, and right now it's a variety of Ouroboros cans. These are so unusual and tasty, featuring flavors you won't find anywhere else. So weird, tasty things. I'm telling you, they sound weird. They taste delicious. So things like peppermint watermelon, basil berry, lemongrass coconut, cactus rose, or my favorite, lavender cucumber. Now, as always, if you have any potential food allergies, please email us as soon as possible and we will do our best to accommodate them. As you know, we donate 5% of total sales to different social justice organizations each month. So our featured organization for July is Kundiman. Founded by poets, Kundiman is a national nonprofit organization dedicated to nurturing generations of writers and readers of Asian American literature. You can learn more about them at kundiman.org. Link in our show notes. Now, like I said, our July boxes are absolutely full of fantastic goodies and one of our biggest boxes yet, so you don't want to miss out. You'll get this box if you subscribe before July 9th. Then after that, you can purchase the poetry box for a one-time purchase, but it will be at a higher price. Our August and September boxes are going to kick just as much ass, though, so you might as well subscribe. Spoiler alert, our August theme is beach reads, and we will have a ton of new releases to choose from, to swap, to add. You will not be wanting for summer beach reads in August. So, I don't know, get yourself a 3-month subscription. Join us for an absolutely badass, intersectional, feminist summer. And as always, you can find us at feministbookclub.com, on Instagram at feministbookclubbox, on Twitter at feministbookclub, that's feminist without the vowels, and TikTok at feministbookclub. So thanks for listening. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points.
Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a thing.